It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're exploring recycling in the state of Iowa. We're also going to look at some innovative programs to get more out of our trash as the hour goes on. But one of the state's oldest recycling programs is our bottle deposit law. And most people have probably taken a bag of aluminum cans to a redemption center to collect those nickel deposits. You walk in, you get them counted, and you collect your money. But what happens next? IPR's Catherine Perkins recently visited the Can Shed in Cedar Rapids to take a tour with owner and operator Troy Willard. Willard says they process 1.5 million containers per week at the facility, and cans are their bread and butter. It turns out a lot happens after you dump that bag of cans onto the counter.
We are actually kind of the middleman between either the customers or the retailers and the distributors for all the beverage containers with the deposit. Our job is to make sure that the branded cans get back to the correct distributors so they get reimbursed the nickel that they collected when they sold the container in the first place. It's probably not as commonly known as it should be that the distributors actually reimburse us 6 cents for every container instead of five. Back in 35 years ago when they passed the law, that was the incentive for either the retailers to do the work to sort the stuff back out, or have a sheltered workshop or a privateer like myself come in and say, hey, I can make money at doing this. That penny has been that same penny for that 35 years, and we're always looking for a raise. So what we've advocated for a long time is an increase in the handling fee to keep up with the overhead and the costs that are ever increasing. We've also tried to talk about expansion. The original bottle bill, when it was written, focuses mainly on carbonated beverages and alcoholic beverages because that's what the containers were 35 years ago. We didn't have bottled water. We didn't have iced teas. We didn't have lemonades. We didn't have sport drinks. And what's to be recycled, what's to be deposited is becoming more and more of a problem because there are so many of these beverages out there now. It would eliminate a lot of the confusion. It would also increase the volume of containers coming in, giving us an opportunity to grow our business. The danger there is if we can't make a lot of money at doing it at a penny, more business coming in at little profit doesn't do a lot for us. So that's why we're also advocating for a handling fee increase as well. We call this the Nickel Tour. We've got half a dozen, 16 people on the line. The bags are getting dumped in the front end of the hopper as it's coming down the line. We're picking off the different distributors other than Pepsi. Pepsi's our biggest distributor, so what we do is we let their cans stay on the line to the very end, so the boxes are filling themselves as they're coming off the end. We start them out with the easy stuff, the Pepsis and the Mountain Dews and that, but as they're here longer, they get an eye for it. And start learning some of the nuances or some of the lesser-known brands and who distributes them. The cans are usually, they go back to a smelter, and they're made into sheet stock that end up going back to someplace that's making cans and lids for the distributors. I think I've heard the turnaround on that can coming through the system is even less than 30 days. I mean, that's how fast they can crank it through. If I could tell people one thing, clean and rinse your cans. Most people do a really good job, but it's a challenging environment when you got to deal with beer spit and chew spit and bottles that aren't completely empty, and so it gets gummy and it gets gross, and so we like empty, clean containers.
That was Troy Willard, owner and operator of the Can Shed in Cedar Rapids. The audio postcard was produced by Catherine Perkins. And this hour, we are talking about recycling on Talk of Iowa. With me is Teresa Kurtz, Executive Director of the Iowa Recycling Association. And also joining us now is Joe Hummel, Recovered Material Sales Manager at City Carton, a recycling center in Iowa City. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Charity. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. And maybe we should start right where Troy leaves off. He was talking about clean, empty containers, and a lot of us struggle with what we need to do to prepare things to go into our recycling bins. How important is it to have things be clean when you're looking at recycling?
It's definitely important. We appreciate it when people do take the time to rinse out the milk jugs, the peanut butter jars and whatnot before they put them into the bins. It helps us cut down on, you know, the pest problems that would come along with having the food residue. It also helps keep our facility smelling a little bit cleaner and a little bit cleaner for our equipment and better for our employees that are actually doing some of the hand sorting and whatnot that takes place.
If there is residue on the containers, like in a yogurt cup, that kind of thing, does that prevent it from being recycled?
Not necessarily. It's more just from a cleanliness standpoint. Most plastics, once they are sorted and then they head back to wherever they end up to go to be recycled, they go through a washing process at that time, which will remove any leftover residue.
All right. Now, when we first started recycling, there was a lot of sorting and taking the labels off of the cans and crushing the cans. You know, we had to do quite a bit more than it seems like we have to do today, where we just put everything in a bin together. So when you are picking stuff up at the curb and you bring it in, what kind of a sorting process do you have to go through to separate out all of the different things?
Well, materials can be collected together, but they still cannot be recycled together. So plastics are pulled out. Metals are removed. Cardboard is removed. The papers, most paper grades can actually be recycled together in a pack, which is called mixed paper by most paper mills. When it comes down to the sorting, it's all about value adding and, you know, how can you take material that comes in one form and add value to it so that you can create a return to make the recycling program worthwhile.
So why have these, I mean, I assume that you have to employ a number of people to do this sorting.
Mm-hmm.
Why collect them in this way? Why did we go through that change to put them all together?
It really, single stream, especially in Linn County, has really increased the recovery rate. I think Teresa earlier mentioned that, you know, we're somewhere between 30 to 35%. I would venture to guess that Linn County is probably higher than that because they have the single stream. We processed 12,500 tons last year in Linn County from the Linn County Solid Waste Agency. And what we do is, you know, we bring it in and we don't just, it's not all hand sorted. We do have a series of equipment that can, you know, help us with the sorting. So it has cut down on the amount of manual labor that we do have to use. So, but it does make it easier, and it's all about making it easier and more accessible for the public.
Lowering those barriers. And Teresa, do you see a big difference in communities that have single stream as opposed to communities that you do have to sort your recycling?
I think that definitely the participation rate by residents that have single stream, there is a greater amount of participation, definitely.
So let's talk about plastics, because when you look at the bottom of all these plastic containers, they have those different numbers on the bottom. And again, that was something we used to have to sort out, the number twos and the number threes and the number fours and all of that. And now it all goes into the same bin. Can those plastics be recycled together, or do you have to sort them?
There is still some secondary sorting that takes place. The reason behind why collection is expanded to include now one through sevens is that because there are more markets now available to us. Traditionally, domestically here, we had only markets for number one, which is PET, and number two, HDPE. Markets have expanded now here in the United States for fours and fives. So that really has helped to drive collection. When you have, you know, a market that you can sell a product into, it will lead to more collection for that particular grade.
Is there a difference in how recyclable those different kinds of plastics are? I see number two plastics, which of course are milk jugs. I see products that are made out of those, I think, a little more often than I see the other kinds of plastic. So what's the difference?
It comes down to chemistry. A lot of people think that there's maybe just 7 different kinds of plastic, but there's probably about 50 or 60,000 different types of plastics. Plastics are a lot like metals, where there's alloys, if you want to think of them as alloys. So HDPE number 2, for example, a milk jug is going to melt at a different temperature than a kitty litter bucket, which also is going to be labeled as a number 2. So, they have the same chasing arrows on them, but, when it comes down to the recycling process, they're going to be processed in a little bit different way. Therefore, that's why there still has to be secondary sorting that takes place. As far as ease of recyclability, milk jugs tend to be the easiest because and it's not so much the makeup, it's because they haven't had a pigment added to them. So they can actually be used in a wider variety of products after the fact, for a secondary life than maybe something that's like a yellow bucket or whatnot. So
why does the pigment make such a difference?
It's just all about marketability in terms of what the secondary processor wants to do with it. If they take a milk jug that's been hasn't been pigment added to it, they can make that any color that they would like. So if they're going to make plastic playground furniture or plastic playground parts, for example, they could make it pink, they could make it red, yellow, whatever they wanted.
Now we were talking about trash in 5 words or less, and Matthew in Iowa City says it's worth money. That's his comment. And I'm curious about how a recycling center makes money. Who are you selling these recyclable goods to?
For the most part, paper goes into paper mills here in the United States. And actually, International Paper operates a large mill in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, that's one of the largest in the world for recycled cardboard. So that is a great resource for us to have right here in our backyard where we collect cardboard, we sort it out, we bale it, and then we ship it to the International Paper Mill. Newspaper gets sold into mills that are making newsprint, also mills that could be using it to make insulation for homes. The white office paper that people recycle often gets turned into bath towels, hand towels, tissue towels, stuff like that. And I think napkins as well are also made from a lot of recycled. So, paper mills, for the metal that gets recycled, we sell back to steel mills. Plastics goes to a variety of different plastics manufacturers, whether they're making drainage tile, pipe, park benches, plastic playground equipment, plastic lumber, plastic decking, a lot of those products.
Now, a lot of people who don't recycle make the argument that recycling is so energy intensive that it's really not worth the effort. What's your response to people who say that?
It's actually a misnomer. If you wanted to produce a product from 1 ton of recyclables, the energy requirement for that's going to be about 10.4 million BTUs. Whereas if you're going to produce a ton of product from virgin materials, your energy expenditure is going to be about 23 million BTUs. And the cost and the carbon footprint in terms of BTUs for processing a ton of recyclables is less than 1 million. So, you have a delta there of almost 13 million BTUs and only 1 million to process it on average. So, yeah, it's just not true.
Now, we have on the recycling front this question from John in Waterloo. He says, I want to know why they haven't invented something that compresses or melts down number 6 styrofoam.
Actually, they do have equipment that will process styrofoam. It's just kind of still in its early stages of development. So it's like a flat screen TV was 5-10 years ago when it cost $4,000. So we're hoping that, as technology increases and more manufacturers enter that marketplace, that the processing costs will lower to the point where it makes it cost effective to do it on a smaller level.
Now, Teresa was mentioning earlier the rigid plastics being a problem as far as recycling goes, and that's something that you're addressing at City Carton, right?
Yes. Rigids and film both. Both of those products or materials, I should say, create problems for our processing just based on the size of our conveyors. The film will actually wrap itself up in our moving parts, so we ask people not to bring the film type of stuff in the bins. Same with the rigids, they'll wedge in the conveyors and they'll create a bridge. So what we'll do is we've added containers at our drop sites so that people can bring those items in and deposit them there, and then we can process them separately. The problem becomes is when they're mixed in with the residential curbside.
Now, Teresa, I want to ask you, there are people who say that in some ways our landfill system is rigged to be in favor of dumping things into the landfill. They feel there aren't enough economic incentives for communities to do a lot of recycling. What do you feel about that?
Oh, no, I don't agree with that at all. I think that the issue is the way that recycling is funded. It's kind of a catch-22 that we rely on a certain amount of waste being buried in the landfills to fund recycling programs. However, I do feel that in my heart and in my bones that the solid waste agency system that we have, where almost every planning area is publicly owned and run, whether it be through the local government or a 2080 agreement, and that they are very vested in not being rigged and not wanting to just bury everything. I mean, they're very invested in so many different programs and very innovative in their programs. So that's my two cents worth.
Now,
I'm really proud of our system here, except for the funding for recycling.
So if we could do one thing that you feel could get us closer to that 50% mark that was the original goal, what would that be, Teresa?
Oh, I have to pick one.
Yeah.
there are so many things. Make easy access, recycling for everyone, easy access, whether it be through the hub and spoke system or apartment recycling or business recycling. So I'm going to stick with easy access for recycling.
All right. How about you, Joe?
Mine would be more of a pay-as-you-throw system, so which is more expensive, obviously, because you would need to basically retrofit an entire fleet of a city. But you could take containers and put an RFID tag in there, have a reader that's on the truck. The truck would then weigh everybody's trash container that week, and you would pay for what you throw away.
So
and
create then, more of a personal incentive
right,
on a
make,
weekly basis.
Make recycling either a fixed cost or free, and then make the waste side where you pay as you throw.
When you talk about things that are easy to recycle, like number two plastic, it makes me wonder why we don't see more products sold in number two plastic. Why do you think that is?
I think we're starting to see more. You know, Procter & Gamble recently started doing some of their bottles, their shampoo bottles, back from originally bottle to bottle. And then Pepsi's also doing some bottle to bottle with number one. So, you know, we're starting to see more of that, and that's encouraging.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Joe.
Yeah, thank you.
Joe Hummel, recovered material sales manager at City Carton in Iowa City. And Teresa, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Teresa Kurtz, Executive Director of the Iowa Recycling Association. Coming up, we're going to talk about food waste. We're also going to talk about some innovative programs to get more out of our trash. And you're welcome to send your questions as well. You can send them to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, tweet us at IPR Talk, or post on our Facebook page. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.